Hi, it's Quinn, and you're listening to Not So Bloody Mary, the show about women in history with negative reputations. Enjoy the show!
Hey, Grace.
Hi, Quinn.
Hi, how are you?
I'm swell. How are you?
Exhausted.
And why is that, Quinn?
Because I worked 53 hours this week, and I'm literally 16 years old. Also, if you worked more than that, please don't DM us or something. It's not a competition of who's the most tired. I'm just really tired. But yeah, and I have the 4 and 5 year olds at camp this week, so they're probably going to be
next week.
Even more tiring, which is tomorrow. Can't wait to start.
It was tomorrow.
And I have to go to plunge. It's okay. I actually really, really like my job, everybody. If anybody from work is listening, I really like it there. Honestly, I did advertise the podcast at work. So literally our training, we were doing 2 truths and a lie. And one of my truths was that I had a history podcast and nobody believed me. So there we go. Why would I make that up?
I don't know.
Where would I get the idea to specifically say I have a history podcast as a lie? What? But yeah, I do. Hi, everybody from work. I'm pretty sure none of you are actually probably going to listen to this. But if you do, hi, let me know. Or maybe hi. Don't, because that's awkward. I hate when people I know listen. But if you know me and you've been listening, please keep listening. Yeah, we've been MIA for a really long time because life got in the way.
Yeah.
But this research has been done for a long time. But then I had to get a COVID test and I was sick and I couldn't talk. I did not have COVID. But now still I sometimes sound like I'm coughing up a lung. So if I start coughing, that's really fun. So I think one of my campers probably gave me a cold.
Love that for you.
Thanks, besties. I bet I know exactly which one it was. But I'm not going to say it on here because I don't want to call them out.
Because they're going to totally be listening.
Yeah, my 6-year-olds are listening to this.
If you're six years old, please don't listen to this.
Please don't listen to this. Go listen. Queen's podcast is putting out kids-friendly episodes right now. Go listen to that. Go. Shoo. Anyways, hi, everybody that's over, 13 years old. Welcome back. I don't even know what to say. I'm just not in it. But welcome to Not So Bloody Mary podcast, the podcast about women in history with negative reputations. Right now, we're covering our favorite bestie, Catherine Howard.
Woo.
Oh, Kit Kat. Don't even know what to do with her. Literally, her name just autocorrects on my phone now because I text about her so much. And Belen. Belen is always on my phone. And Aragorn. Something is wrong. But Catherine Howard, bestie Catherine. I don't even really remember where we left her, but I'm sure it was not good. Sure she was doing something she wasn't supposed to be doing. But this episode, we're going to be covering her affair with Thomas Culpepper.
Yay!
That's not very fun, you guys.
No.
But hopefully it's a good episode. Don't stop listening just because I told you it wasn't going to be fun. We have gained more listeners recently because I think you people are finding us on TikTok. Or else maybe someone from my work is listening. That thought scares me a lot.
Let's just go with TikTok.
Let's say TikTok. So it's people I don't have to see every single day. So basically, my friends, we're starting with Catherine Howard, as she's just had a fight with Thomas Culpepper. As you do.
As one does.
Also, little side note, one of my favorite books, The Dead Queen's Club, which is literally just about the wives of Henry VIII, they're in high school now, and two of them die. They did in real life, but they die in different ways. It's really, really good. It sounds terrible, but it's actually really good. In it, Catherine Howard has Thomas Culpepper in her phone as Culpeppy, and his emoji is a turtle because he drove her home when she was drunk at a party. And when they were driving home, there was a turtle in the middle of the road, and he stopped the car and got it and picked the turtle up and moved it off the road. And that was when she decided that she thought he was attractive. And so,
okay,
whenever I hear his name, I hear Culpeppy and I see the little turtle emoji. So Thomas Culpepper is a turtle, confirmed. Confirmed. Great. Just like Matthew Morrison is also a turtle. He looks like one when he gets angry. That's real. True. Yeah. Sorry, Matthew Morrison. We don't want to hate you. We hate Will Schuster, not you. Yeah. So Catherine is mad at Thomas Culpepper because they had a fight, as you do, since she's 17. Well, maybe 18 now. I don't know.
Either way.
We don't know when her birthday was. And so they were like, you know, she stayed away from him for a little bit, but she was not maybe the smartest at making critical decisions. So her attraction to him, you know, was like, it was still there. So it came back. At some point, they were back at Greenwich, and it was either between the 12th and 31st of May or the 4th and 18th of June. Thomas Culpepper was sick for a few days, and Catherine sent one of her page boys to give him dinner, which, like, that's a little weird, Catherine. He's literally Henry's servant. Why isn't Henry giving him dinner? And why did you just send one of your page boys? Like, go give this random king's servant food. From me. Like,
from me.
Honey, I love you, but no, that was not the smartest thing to do. But now she's still kind of a little pissed at him, but you know, he's sick, so she feels bad. And now it's time for them to go on Progress. It's vacation time. This is 1541. They go on a Progress to the north. It's a new experience. They go to houses that most of the court, who by the way, a lot of them are like old, have never been to. And it's in parts of the country that even Henry has never seen. Keep in mind, he's, like, old now. And he's literally been a little baby prince since he was born. So he's seen a lot of England. I mean, it's not Canada. Like, it's not that big of a country comparatively. But it's also 1541, so it takes way longer to get everywhere. Everything that they went on, like, everywhere they went, they would have to move everything they took by land. Normally, like, a lot of the time they would travel on the River Thames, but they are not, because they have to bring so much crap and they have to go to so many places that can't be reached by the river. So this makes their journey more dependent on the weather than if they had been traveling on the river. So basically, she's being shoved into a situation that has a lot of potential to end in disaster. Her uncle is one of the people that is, like, pushing for the tour. They think that it's gonna like reignite the love for the royals and the control that they have over the region. So I guess Northerners are still kind of pissed at them because, you know, those are people that took part of the Pilgrimage of Grace in 1536. I don't know. Jane Seymour was alive. Norfolk and his cronies are like, we should go on a tour. As you do.
As one does.
Yeah, so there's a lot of precautions that are taken to protect the royal party because they're afraid that Northerners are going to come stab them or something. Significant and loyal Northerners were told not to come greet the king and queen, but to just stay in their village so that they could make sure that there's no angry mobs.
I see.
Yeah, so it's a little cray-cray. But now Catherine gets a new title. Yay for Catherine. On July 7th, she's still a Dunstable, and she receives a title when heralds at Greenwich proclaim her the first ever Queen Consort of Ireland. The Irish Parliament had been summoned in spring, met from the 13th of June to the 20th of July, and its first statute was a proposal to change Henry's title from Lord of Ireland to King of Ireland. Yay. This really isn't that great because it starts a pattern of English control over Ireland that kills a lot of Irish people. But for Catherine, I'm sure Catherine was happy. She got another title. I'm also pretty sure Henry's been Lord of Ireland for like a ridiculously long time. I'm pretty sure it's one of the titles that his parents gave him when he was little to be like, aw, he needs to practice being king. Even though he wasn't going to be king, so maybe it was after his brother died. I don't know. I could be totally wrong. But now he's king of Ireland. Yay.
Yay.
I'm pretty sure they had, like, a little, like, dinner thing, and they all wore green. I'm not sure if that's true or if I just read it in a fake diary book, but it also could have been based on fact. So Lady Rochford, our bestie Jane, is Catherine's favorite. That is what they call her. She is the queen's favorite, which sounds really weird. But they keep talking about Thomas Culpepper. Lady Rochford told the queen that another one of the king's privy chamber gentlemen, Thomas Paston, was also captivated by Catherine. Paston, who was then 24, about Thomas Culpepper's age, was single and would 2 years later marry Catherine's niece. I'm sure Catherine's niece was near her age because she was part of a massive family, but that sounds wrong. Catherine was not interested in Paston at all. She was like, okay, I'm sure lots of people have crushes on me. I'm literally queen. Calm yourselves. But she was becoming obsessed with Culpepper. She is like, everything is about him. She thinks about him all the time. It's very teenager. But, you know, this is not a good thing at all. Since their conversation at Greenwich, she keeps sending him messages and gifts, and they pass these things back and forth between them. She's worried about him when he's sick, but so far they haven't been able to meet privately. Lady Rochford has been given the task of arranging a meeting. Catherine, you realize you are setting Lady Rochford up to die, but we'll talk more about that when we do our Lady Rochford episode, because how much was she scheme in this, and how much was it just Catherine being like, hey, servant that legally has to do what I say, find a meeting for me. But yeah, so the Viscountess was like, sure, bestie, I'll do what you say, according to Margaret Morton and Catherine Tilney. That's what they remembered. They remembered that Lady Rochford was like, yeah, this definitely, I will do that for you. A lot of these things come from people's recollections, because when Catherine is questioned later, they ask her a lot of questions about this time, because that's when her affair like kind of begins. Every time they show up at a new house on progress, Lady Rochford goes and like looks at the stairs. She checks the stairs to make sure that they're suitable. They're like discreet, they're hidden, like you can see if people are coming, things like that. So far, she hadn't found anything suitable for any discreet conversations that Catherine and Culpepper wanted to have. And even if she had found anything, Culpepper couldn't be away from the privy chamber if he was on duty, because, you know, he had to be there to help Henry. And also, if Henry demanded his company, he needed to be there. So, now, okay, this is, like, completely out of context, but I found this quote in the book I was doing, and it was really funny. Because so Catherine and Norfolk are fighting now. They don't really like each other. Let's remember that Anne and Norfolk also fell out. So I think Norfolk is just really annoying. So this is the quote. Norfolk, whose ability to play the victim was matched by a determination never to play the role quietly, had once complained that Queen Anne Boleyn drove him from her presence with words that one would not use to a dog, which, if nothing else, was inaccurate on the basis that she liked her dogs far more than she did her uncle. End quote. So, honestly, yeah, calm yourself down, Norfolk. Not everything is about you. But the fact that Catherine and Norfolk aren't, like, close, and they don't really seem to have ever really been close, proves to a lot of historians that he was not her pimp, that they just, Henry showed interest in Catherine, and the family took advantage of it. Just like with Anne. Right. So, yeah. Catherine is doing a great job on progress. She is, like, amazing. This is one of the high points of her queenship. Throughout the progress, she carried out her public duties perfectly. She was, like, on point. Okay. Accounts of the tour that were literally written years after, once she was killed for adultery, referred to her as Henry's fair and beloved queen, because she had done such a good job on this tour. Like, when they wrote about it, they were like, she was awesome. Awesome. She was behaved perfectly, and she was content, like, she was someone who was content to dazzle as a supporting player. She didn't want to be involved in the politics. She didn't want to help Henry rule the country like Catherine of Aragon or Anne Boleyn. She was okay with just being there, which is what Henry wanted at this point in his life.
Right.
At the very, very beginning of his kingship, he needed Catherine of Aragon because he had no clue what to do. But then he got sick of her, and he didn't like her telling him what to do anymore. So, you know. Now, it's time for the beginning of Catherine and Thomas Culpepper. I'm not going to call this a relationship because there's so much going on with, was it really super consensual? What was happening? But we're just going to go, you can look into that on your own, people, and form your own opinion, because I feel like no matter what I say, I will get hate for that. So we're just going to talk about their affair. Because they did meet. Like, this is, yeah. It's very clear. It happened. Lady Rochford's bedroom was placed at the top of a narrow little flight of stairs that were, like, right next to the Queen's. Since she was the Queen's preferred lady-in-waiting and a member of her privy chamber, the location of her rooms was not suspicious. Like, it was nice and close, so if Catherine, like, needed something, Jane could go help her. However, when Catherine was like, hey, Jane, come have a late night chat with me in my rooms, that was odd. People were like, what do they have to talk about? Jane is widowed, like, old enough to be Catherine's mother. What is happening here? Obviously, we know what's happening. Once they thought they were alone, Catherine and Lady Rochford went to the back entrance to the apartments and waited for Thomas Culpepper to show up. Yeah. Then a guardsman literally found an unlocked door leading into the Queen's apartments because they left the door unlocked. And Catherine and Lady Rochford ducked out of view and the guard relocked the door. So they did not get caught, but they were not the smartest. He had by then moved on. Before Culpepper arrived, and he was accompanied by one of his servants. He was told to wait outside with one of Catherine's servants. They were just out there. I hope they were not in the same spot, because both of them would have known what was going on if they saw another servant. Like, what? Apparently, Culpepper was, like, super pleased with himself because he picked the lock, so he thought that he was, like, the coolest thing on the planet. But Catherine was really scared because the guard had come. So she was really frightened because they were so, so close to getting caught. And so Culpepper, like, calmed her down. It says being his most charming self, which just sounds sleazy to me. But she was really anxious. Then the three of them relocated to the Queen's lavatory. So, like, her toilet, I think. Which was a large room with enough space for Lady Rochford to doze in the corner. So she just slept. Well, the two of them talked for a while. Apparently they talked for about three or, like, a bunch of hours until, like, 2 or 3 in the morning, which makes Lady Rochford's claim later that she fell asleep much more believable.
Yeah.
Because, like, if she said, I fell asleep, and it was, like, 4 in the afternoon, that's just her saying she fell asleep so that she doesn't have to, like, you know, answer for what they did. Like, it's not her responsibility. Like, she didn't have to be watching. If she fell asleep and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, it's like, okay, I understand. I would also be asleep if they weren't involving me in a conversation. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. Despite how late she had gone to bed the night before, the next evening, the Queen asked Catherine Tilney's, this was the servant that she brought with her the first time, to accompany her on another visit to Lady Rochford. I don't know why Catherine needs a maid to come with her to visit her other lady-in-waiting. But apparently she does.
She does.
This time, Catherine Tilney was told to wait in, like, a little alcove outside the room where she sat with Lady Rochford's maid for hours. They're just there. On the other side of the door, the Queen and Lady Rochford once again went out a back exit and went down to the stool house where Culpepper joined them. There weren't a lot of opportunities to meet once they left London. So even though they had, like, the near brush with the guardsmen the previous night, they didn't want to miss the chance to talk. Apparently, Catherine was now, she was a little more anxious than she was the night before. She was agitated. She kept jumping whenever she heard a noise and would, like, go and hide in the shadows. If you have to be this scared about what you're doing, I don't think you should be doing it.
Yeah, just a hunch. Maybe don't.
The first night they talked together, they talked about the past. They talked about, like, their old lovers. And then the second evening, the conversation was, like, in the present. She was like, I'm in love with you. And he said he felt the same. He was bound to her because he did love her again above all other creatures. We don't really know how he actually felt, though. Like, he could have just been like, hey, she's kind of hot. She's the queen. When Henry dies, which will be soon, she'll be left with a lot of money. As Culpepper left, he kissed Catherine's hand, and he was like, it's the only physical intimacy I could allow myself. Because, like, if he had more, he wouldn't want to stop, is basically what he's saying. The possibility that the queen might commit adultery with Culpepper was now a probability. And the only explanation for why she kind of wants to do this is the fact that she fell in love with Culpepper. Yeah, his motivation is less clear. He said all the right things, but it's difficult to believe that he was as romantically infatuated with Catherine as she was with him.
Yeah.
Later on, nobody suggested that it was Culpepper who was the initiating party. Everybody says that it was Catherine that wanted to start it. Now, of course, people could have been lying, but, like, they interrogated them about this.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. The, like, best explanation for Culpepper isn't that he was, like, blackmailing her or something. It's probably that he was like, hey, Henry's gonna die, and then Catherine will be rich, and then I can marry her and also be rich.
Yeah.
So, but at this point during the progress, the king's relationship with Scotland forced them to change the itinerary. By 1541, the Anglo-Scottish tensions were super, super huge over the Scottish encouragement of Irish and English rebels. And also they kept giving English exiles asylum, which Henry didn't really like. Henry's nephew was king, so Henry's, like, mad at his nephew. James, what is he doing? James is the father of Mary, Queen of Scots. So, famous child. He just isn't really that famous on his own. No offense to him. Sorry, James. That sounds great. Okay. So, Henry was like, okay, besties, what are we doing? And so the Scottish court sent Thomas Bellenden, who was a justice clerk, to meet Henry during the progress. When he came, Bellenden was like, hey, do you want to meet with my king? Which Henry has literally been trying to arrange for, like, a decade. And James just keeps, like, skirting out and not meeting him. So Henry was like, yeah, I do. A face-to-face encounter with James would give him the chance to be like, hey, James, want to, like, join my reformation and get rid of papal authority in Rome? Yeah, so... There aren't any signs that James was leaning towards this at all. Henry was just like, I'm so cool, he'll say yes to me.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, I don't think he did, since Mary, Queen of Scots, was the Catholic heir to the Tudor throne, and that's why Elizabeth was terrified of her and eventually killed her. Cool. Well, I mean, Mary did plot to have Elizabeth overthrown, but... Because Elizabeth had, like, a terror of executing her relatives. It was not her thing. But she made an exception because Mary, Queen of Scots, was a legitimate child who was Catholic. And so a lot of people wanted her to be queen over Elizabeth. What a time. Yeah, so now Catherine is not doing well. She's not having a good time at all. Her old mixture of, like, overconfidence and nervous insecurity was now even more magnified by the progress. Whenever she was in her apartments, she was, like, kind of... It was really hard to tell what mood she was going to be in. She was jumpy. She was tired. She didn't care how she was behaving. And she was treating her servants terribly. She was snapping at them and issuing orders that confused or upset them. She, like, wouldn't give them clear things to do and then get mad at them for not doing it right. Catherine Tilney was sent to Lady Rochford with messages that were so imprecise that she didn't know how to word them. the queen's sister Isabella was told that she was no longer allowed to come into the queen's bedchamber, even though she was part of the privy chamber, which is allowed to do that. And the chamberers were being dragged around back stairwells to spend half the night waiting in alcoves. Two of the chamberers, Margaret Morton and Mistress Lufkin, had gotten yelled at by Catherine when she thought they were spying on her. So she's not being very nice right now, in case you can't tell. She's just like super moody, and it's really hard to figure anything out about like what she's gonna do. I think she's been married for Henry, like married to Henry for too long.
Yeah,
she's molding into him, but she's not, guys, don't worry. And now our least favorite human, Francis Dereham, has come back. We thought he was gone, didn't we? Well, he's not. He arrives on the 25th of August, which gives Catherine a crisis because she can't afford to alienate him, because he could say anything and get her in trouble. There wasn't any vacancy in her household that was like obvious, but she had to make up something. So Catherine introduced Francis to the rest of her staff as a new gentleman usher who had previously worked for the Dowager Duchess of Norfolk. So here's the thing. Letting Francis work with her was probably not the best idea, because then all of Henry's counselors later on thought she and Francis had reignited their affair.
Oh my.
But what else was she supposed to do? But unfortunately, Catherine's anxiety about Francis being a problem proved justified. He boasted to his friend Robert Damport that many people at court hated him because of the favor Catherine showed him at and after Pontefract. More accurately, the Queen's other servants couldn't understand why Catherine tolerated such terrible behavior from him, or why he had been appointed in the first place. She literally paid him money to shut up. Like, she'd be like, could you stop being annoying and give him money? Throughout the spring and summer of 1541, Catherine's household was, like, not doing well. Francis Dereham, being annoying and indiscreet, provoked the suspicion of male members within the household. Lady Rochford's random ascendancy provoked the jealousy of her female equivalents, and Margaret Morton and Madame Lufkin both thought they were going to be dismissed to make way for two girls suggested by the Dowager Viscountess. Most nights, the Queen locked the doors to her bedroom, and only Lady Rochford was allowed to come in and attend her. One time, Mistress Lufkin either disobeyed or misunderstood the instructions she was given, and when she tried to enter, Catherine was so angry, she's like, I'm going to get rid of you, I'm going to fire you right now. I wouldn't want to work for her. When one of the king's servants came with a message for Catherine, the door was bolted. Like the queen's staff, he didn't say anything, but he remembered it later. Lady Rochford ensured that certain doors were left open, and then Catherine sent Culpepper a note that said, as ye find the door, so to come, which was subsequently used to imply that she had considered inviting him into her bed.
Okay.
Probably when they were at York, Culpepper got sick again. I don't know of what, but, you know, it's 1541. She wrote to him. So this is the only known one of Catherine's letters that survives in full. People think it might date from Culpepper's sickness at Greenwich earlier in the summer, but its tone and some of the details, including the fact that she can't see him every day and open declarations of love, it seems to point to a later date in the summer. Okay, it's time for a dramatic reading.
Let's go.
I'm not actually going to do it dramatically. I will just read it, but some of these words, a lot of them are spelt wrong, so I had to spell check them.
Spell check for our bestie, Catherine.
She just needs it. Her education wasn't really that good. Okay, here we go. Master Culpepper, I heartily recommend me unto you, praying you to send me word how that you do. It was showed me that you was sick, the which thing troubled me very much till such time that I hear from you, praying you to send me word how that you do, for I never longed so much for a thing as I do to see you and to speak with you, the which I trust shall be shortly now. That which doth comfort me very much when I think of it, and when I think again that you shall depart from me again, it makes my heart die to think what fortune I have that I cannot be always in your company. Yet my trust is always in you, that you will be as you have promised me, and in that hope I trust upon still. praying that you will come when my Lady Rochford is here, for then I shall be best at leisure to be at your commandment, thanking you for that which you have promised me to be so good unto that poor fellow, my man, which is one of the griefs that I do feel to depart from him, for then I do know no one that I dare trust to send to you. And therefore I pray you take him to be with you, that I may sometime hear from you one thing. I pray you to give me a horse for my man, for I had much ado to get one, and therefore I pray send me one by him, and in doing so I am as I said afore. And thus I take my leave of you, trusting to see you shortly again, and I would you was with me now, that you might see what pain I take in writing to you. Yours as long as life endures, Catherine. One thing I had forgotten, and that is to instruct my man to tarry here with me still, for he says whatsoever you bid him, he will do it. The end.
Dang.
It's really, like, kind of confusing, but basically she's like, I miss you. I haven't seen you. I miss you, and I love you, and I just send me some news of how you're doing, and then we can see each other, and just give me a horse. Yeah. Basically, yeah. And people use this to be like, yeah, they definitely banged, but I don't really know where that suggests anything in there, but yeah. Now it's time to visit the Scots. The rendezvous between the two kings in York would be the first time that Catherine had ever met fellow royalty or interacted with social equals since her wedding. James would probably bring his wife, who, like Catherine, had been born into the nobility and married into royalty. His wife is Marie de Guise, who declined Henry VIII's offer of marriage, like, 6-ish years ago.
Good for her.
Awkward, but fun. Good job, Marie. Okay, so the thing is, like, okay, we need to impress the Scottish visitors. We need to display our wealth. We need to be like, we are so rich and powerful, you don't even know. So it's, like, a big deal to just have everything super, super good. The court was going to be beneath a spotlight in front of an audience of who, like, all these people are ready to find something wrong with England. They are ready for that. And as the court's leading lady, everything Catherine did, said, and wore would be critiqued by her Scottish guests. So they go to York, and they wait. And they wait. And they wait some more. And in the last week of September, Henry finally accepts that the King of Scots is not coming. He doesn't show up. He's like, yeah, let's have a meeting. And he just never comes. I would be pissed. They probably spent so much on everything to get that ready. Like, what? And also, Henry could have gone to one of his other palaces and, like, had fun somewhere other than York. But no. So, you know, obviously now England and Scotland are not doing well. Their relations are not great. Scotsmen on the borders launch attacks on their English counterparts. There's, like, all this bad stuff. I think this is around the time that Henry wanted to engage Edward to marry Queen of Scots. This is, like, around this time. Then they say no, and then he, like, burns a bunch of Scottish villages, and it's really nasty. I don't know if Catherine was queen for that, but it was around this time. So now they reach Windsor Castle. On October 26th, Henry and Catherine have received the news from London that Henry's only surviving sister and sibling, Queen Margaret, had died at Methven Castle near Perth 8 days earlier. So that's Lady Margaret Tudor, who we did an episode on before.
Right.
Rest in peace to Bestie Margaret. Now Henry is the last surviving of the first generation of Tudors that was not born in the Wars of the Roses. So it's just him. They didn't have a really great relationship. So, as is evident by the fact that if they went into mourning for his sister and the literal mother of Catherine's highest ranking lady in waiting, who was the daughter of the last king, there is not any record of the fact that they had mourning, and they were not wearing it by the time they reached Hampton Court Palace only 10 days after Margaret passed away. When a foreign queen died, Henry had his court in mourning for, like, multiple weeks. And for his sister, he probably didn't even do it. And if he did, it didn't even last 2 weeks. Bruh. Yeah. And also, she was a queen of Scotland. Like, it's not like she's just, like, his random sister that was never queen of anything. No. I hate him. He's way more upset that his son had a fever than the fact that his sister died. There was an agreement that the fever was serious enough to put Edward's life in danger. But he didn't die, obviously. This is in the Tudors, Edward getting a fever. It's really nice. Elizabeth finds him sick. So she didn't, you know, need enough going on in her life. But it was at this point that the king started to notice how indulgent Edward's servants were. They would, like, do whatever he wanted, and they would feed him too much, but also with literally whatever he wanted, even if it wasn't good for him. So if they're like, hey, Edward, you need to have a balanced diet and eat some vegetables, he'd be like, no, I want marzipan. And they'd be like, okay, here you go. Have some chocolate. So the child is not exactly the healthiest. Because, you know, a balanced diet is important. And he can afford to eat one because he's rich. Like, this is why you don't let a 2-year-old choose their own diet. Well, he's actually like 4, but I don't really care. I was not at all smart at 4 years old. But yeah, the French ambassador bribed one of the doctors into getting some gossip. Like, what? He bribed them. But yeah, this is what the doctor said. Apart from this accident, the prince is so fat and unhealthy as to be unlikely to live long. So Edward is not doing great. But yeah, no, he's fine. He recovers, but now his establishment gets more frequent inspections by the king's counselors. So they don't really just let them do whatever now. I guess that's good. I don't know. I feel like Henry should pay attention to his kid. So Jane Seymour did not die for him to be a deadbeat dad.
Well,
he was a deadbeat dad, though.
He was.
Even for Edward. Oh my god, I saw... Okay, I got so mad at this. I was listening to a podcast, and these people did not really know anything about the royal family, but I like her true crime videos, so I was listening to it. And they said that Elizabeth was Henry's favorite daughter when she was, like, 10. She was not his favorite daughter when she was 10 years old. She was his favorite daughter when she was, like, until she was, like, 2.5. Like, I think he hated both of his children. Like, both of his daughters. I don't think he had a favorite. I think he just disliked both of them. But they were like, yeah, no, Henry would have noticed that his favorite daughter, like, got sick or something. And I was like, are you sure about that?
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, it made me really mad. Anyways, so they get back to Hampton Court Palace. They're not really on progress anymore, I don't think, because I think that's kind of their home base. Catherine Tilney comes to Lady Rochford, and she's like, hey, the Queen sent me to ask if you have the thing that you promised her. And Tilney was sent back with a message which was difficult to interpret, but easy to kind of think that it was something secret or inappropriate, that Lady Rochford sat up for it, and she would next day bring her word herself. This incident proves that Catherine's relationship with Culpepper was not just like a summer thing. It was not like their hot girl summer moment. Summer romance. Regardless of the dangers of meeting him in a palace like Hampton Court, because like everybody knows everything that's going on there, Catherine intended to keep seeing him. The next day, All Souls Day, Catherine went through her morning toilet thing, and she either heard mass in her apartments or went to the Chapel Royal for a second public service. It's not in the sources. All Souls Mass was not considered a public holy day in the same way as All Saints Mass, so doesn't mean that she actually had to be there, so we don't know if she was there or not. If she was there, Catherine wouldn't have seen much of Henry anyways. For the second time in her life, her private life was about to be upended by a letter left for a relative during Mass. This time, no amount of charm would save her from the consequences. Ha ha ha, it's happening. I'm not doing well. Okay. God. Archbishop Cranmer and the two colleagues that had been left behind with him in London during the progress, the Lord Chancellor, Sir Thomas Audley, and Edward Seymour, Earl of Hertford, had spent most of the council meeting on All Saints Day informing the other councillors of what had happened in their absence. They're like, hey, this is what happened. This is the news that we left out of our letters. And here, let's talk about the situation with Scotland. There was one item of new business that they didn't share with the rest of the Privy Council. It was an audience that Cranmer had granted to an evangelical called John Lascell, who had arrived at Lambeth, the Archbishop's official London residence, and asked to speak with him. Lascell told the Archbishop that his younger sister Mary, who is now Mary Hall, had once worked as a servant at Norfolk House, which was the Dowager Duchess's residence. Mary, who is now a married woman living in Sussex by 1541, was a nursemaid to Lord William Howard's eldest daughter, and then was a chamberer to the Dowager when Catherine lived there as a ward. During a recent visit to his sister and his brother-in-law, Lascell had tried to get Mary to petition for a place in Catherine's household. Mary was like, I would not be comfortable living there, because she was light both in living and conditions. She kind of offset this criticism with the caveat that even though she disapproved of her, she was very sorry for the queen. And Lascell was like, what do you mean? She's the queen. Can you be more specific? And so Mary told him about the story of Catherine's romances with Henry Mannix and Francis Dereham. Cranmer then discussed this story with friends, who gave the Archbishop the same advice John Lascell's friends had given to him. He didn't have any choice but to pass on what he knew. If it emerged that Queen Catherine had been unchaste, I don't know how to say that word. If she had had sex before marriage, or, you know, not been super, like, proper, the Archbishop of Canterbury knew, but didn't pass the information on to the king, he would probably find himself disgraced or imprisoned by association. So he wrote down the whole story and left it for the king to pick up after All Souls Day. He was just like, I'm not saying this in person. It's like when you send something in a text because you don't want to say it out loud. He literally did the 1541 version of that. Henry sent for Cranmer once he had read the missive, and he seemed pretty calm as he was like, no, that story is totally fabricated. It's a lie. It was made up by Lascell or by his sister. Regardless of any conflicting feelings between like Henry and his people, the story did have to be verified because either he was breaking the law by defaming the queen, or the king's marriage might have to be annulled, which is the stupidest thing ever because Henry definitely had sex before marriage. But whatever, it's not like Catherine having sex before marriage means that the babies that she might have with him could be someone else's, because they don't know about Culpeper yet. They just know about Mannix and Dereham. And those relationships have been over for years. It's so dumb. But that's the law. To Henry, anyways. I hate him. Just a nasty man. Not okay.
Very nasty.
Henry's only other stipulation to the five men in his chamber was that all the inquiries need to be handled with the most discretion. It needed to be, like, perfect. And this condition suggests that any suspicions that Henry had were still outweighed by the hope or belief that it would turn out to be a misunderstanding or a malicious lie. Right now, he's like the TikTok sounder is like, I had two nickels, which isn't a lot, but it's weird that it happened twice, right? Yeah, he's thinking that's not going to be him because it's weird that it happened twice. Not that Anne actually did anything, but he's like, no, I'm not going to have two wives that, you know. Catherine remained in her apartments for the rest of the day, and she has no idea what's going on. As the chosen counselors went about their business on the king's behalf, they didn't give any clue that something was wrong. They did work very quickly, and within 72 hours, they had interviewed every single one of the witnesses that was mentioned in Mary Hall's story. Which, like, good job. Like, whoa. How did they find all of them so fast? Like, what? The Archbishop and Wriothesley were like the perfect good cop, bad cop. They talked to Henry Mannix, and in their presence, he did not just confirm what Mary Hall had said. He also provided information that was so anecdotal that it was impossible to disbelieve him. He told them which rooms in the Duchess's house he and Catherine had met in. He told them about the tip-off he sent to the Dowager about men being invited to the maiden's chamber after sunset. Then he told of Catherine's theft of that letter and then his tussle with Francis Dereham. He gave a list of everyone he could remember who had known about his fling with Catherine. But Crucially, he insisted over and over again that he and Catherine had never gone beyond foreplay. So they had just played around. His version of events, which was confirmed by everyone else that they interviewed, was that he had wanted to take Catherine's virginity and had suggested it to her many times. She had refused, and he had been angry, and so she had moved on to Francis Dearham. Okay. So, I mean, I guess it's a good thing that he listened when she said no. Like, he got angry, but he didn't. He was like, okay. Like, that's good. They still shouldn't have had a relationship because he was in a position of power over her, but good, I guess.
Yeah.
Francis was their next point of attack. He had already been, like, apprehended, probably on the 3rd of November or possibly late on the 2nd. Since he was one of the Queen's ushers, and if he was, you know, like, locked up, Catherine might find out, they put about the story that they were reinvestigating old claims that he had been a pirate during his time in Ireland. Which, like, he probably did. I would believe it.
Yeah.
He confessed to them that he had known her carnally many times when they lived under the Dowager Duchess's roof. And just like Mannix, the details that he provided were very intimate and specific enough to banish any doubt that he was only telling the questioners what he thought they might want to hear. He told them about, like, the female friends who had seen them banging in the bed. Corroboration was sought from the others that were mentioned by Mary Hall and Henry Mannix. Initially, they didn't have time to get to all of them, but a few weeks later, it was written that 8 or 9 were questioned, and they all sang with one tale. Two of Catherine's women, her aunt, Lady Margaret Howard, and her friend, Catherine Tilney, were asked what they knew. Lady Margaret was like, yeah, I kind of suspected that something happened between her and Dearham. And since then, I did hear a few servants gossiping about what would happen if the truth came out. So she was like, yeah, I definitely knew that was probably something that happened. Tilney provided a testimony that unknowingly confirmed some of Mary Hall's testimony and most of Francis Dearham's. Dearham's friend, Edward Waldegrave, was fetched from Edward's household, and he told a story similar in detail to the others. Two of the Dowager Duchess's former maids were summoned, and they said the same thing, too. The slight variations that they had only helped convince those asking the questions that the story was true in essence. Because, like, there wasn't any super massive things, but, like, everything was pretty similar. So, on the 6th of November, the counselors went to Henry to tell him what they had learned, and as their findings were relayed to him, the king sat in a very, very loud silence, like it was uncomfortable to be in. And it dragged on until he began to cry, which was a sight that only a few of his counselors had ever witnessed, and one which was quoted as saying was strange in his courage. So he was just, like, crying and crying and fully sobbing. Like, Henry, I feel a little bit bad, but also you're majorly overreacting. Like, you haven't even found out about the affair yet. Calm yourself. Like, I mean, when he finds out about Culpepper, if he cried then, I could understand that.
Yeah.
Like, he's gross and I hate him and he shouldn't have killed her, but, like, there was more going on with her than there was with Anne. And so I can understand him crying, because if your partner cheats on you, that's something that's upsetting. But also, he cheats on them all the time. But, like, you know, they also, I would feel bad if they cried when he did bad things to them. So they send out orders to the Duke of Norfolk, who was currently quarantined because he was sick. But they were like, get out of your quarantine. We don't care. Come back to court. Would not be an okay move now. And to the Duke of Suffolk, who had been recently granted permission with this. They're like, sorry, we did give you permission to stay home until Christmas, but we don't care anymore. Come back. He was like, oh, man. Just want to be home with my 23-year-old bride. Even though I'm much older than her, since I'm like 10 years older than Henry. Grandpa Charles, what is you doing? Just no. Anne Boleyn, like, roasted him about that once, by the way. So, good job, Anne.
Oh, my.
There's, like, a very obvious feel of uncertainty and disaster that's, like, coming, and it settles over Catherine's rooms. They're like, hey, can you, like, stay in your rooms just for right now? Like, this is just, we're all staying in our rooms. De Marillac heard that Before, she did nothing but dance and rejoice, and now when the musicians come, they are told that it is no more the time to dance. And that is where we're leaving her.
Dang.
Bye, bestie Catherine. We love you. Bye, bestie. Hopefully, we will see you soon. Definitely not next weekend, because I'm at a cottage.
Woo.
So we're just going to leave you in your room, not dancing. But you know what? This is, like, the best you're going to get, Catherine. So... just gonna get worse from here, honey. I'm sorry. Anyways, thank you for listening, peoples of the world. So you can follow us on Instagram at notsobloodymary_podcast, even though I don't post on it like at all, unless it's important. But you should go follow us there anyways, because if something happens, that's where I like post updates. Like if we're supposed to drop something and we don't, then I will tell you on Instagram, not on TikTok, because it'd be a little weird if I just went on TikTok to be like, no episode.
But follow TikTok for
that'd be awkward. Content. Well, it's not daily anymore. go follow TikTok for sometimes daily content, but mostly Quinn gets home from work and falls on the ground, so she doesn't post on there. Yeah, I like literally, because when I get home, like I charge my phone. So I don't go on TikTok on my computer. So I watch TV on my computer. But you should go follow our TikTok at notsobloodymary_podcast. We've gotten lots of new followers on there. Anne Boleyn Lover, whatever your name is, if you're listening. You just commented on like all of our videos. So thanks for that. And they asked me my favorite Mary media. and I was like, well, there's not very much out there that's positive. But here's like some books. And I did say the Tudors is my favorite portrayal of her, even though it's not super accurate, but like the Mary portrayal is pretty accurate. Just not the fact that, you know, like she's older than she is, because obviously they didn't hire a new actress.
Yeah.
Which like I would be mad if they had, so it's fine. But yeah, that's like our socials. We don't really, it's just Grace. Go follow the lovely bookworm, lovely_bookworm on TikTok. Sometimes she goes on live, and then I go on and comment random things and then leave, because it's weird to watch them on live because I know them. it's really awkward. Also, I like your lives, but I hate when you're on live, because then I can't text you because I know that Ella can see your phone. It makes me so uncomfortable. Like, I go over everything I send you before I send it, or I just text you on Snapchat, because then it just says, like, my name sent you a message instead of what the message is. So I, like, go over everything in my head. I'm like, is this okay to say? yeah. So you can go see like Grace on live.
It's fine.
So bad. Anyways. you should leave a review on Apple Podcasts, because it helps other people find us. You can go to anchor.fm/notsobloodymary and leave us a voicemail. We have not had a voicemail yet, so you should, because I want voicemails, because I feel like that's cool. And also my favorite part of recovering, like sometimes is the voicemails, except for when I send one in and they don't put it in the mini-sode, and then I get mad. Yeah, my time that I was in was when Taylor Swift's version of Fearless came out, and I was like, Lena, have you listened to Fearless Taylor's version? And she was like, yes! And it was very exciting for me. Yeah. So, guys, you should all, what should they go do?
Okay, get ready for this one. Drum roll.
Get ready for this. Okay, I drum rolled.
Go take a nap.
Oh, I wish I would do that. It's almost bedtime.
That doesn't matter. Go take a nap.
After dinner. Maybe I'll have a nap after dinner.
Do that.
I think we're watching America's Got Talent. But everybody should go have a nap.
Go have a nap.
Or, like, if you're really bad at having naps like I am, just, like, go lie in your bed and read. But, like...
Or, like, do something that very is chill.
Very, very chill. That's what I do every day when I come home. I don't do anything. I'm, like, leave me alone. I'm tired. Yeah, you should all go stream. What's an album you should stream? I don't know.
I don't really know any albums.
Ghost Dream, the only ones I know are Olivia Rodrigo and Taylor Swift and musicals. Do you think I have a good, like, music vocabulary? No.
I do.
You should go stream Cardigan by Taylor Swift because it's the most well-written song of my generation. And also, I own a cardigan from it, so it's cool.
And Take Yours by Matthew Mole.
Take Yours. I don't know that song, but that's my version of it. So thanks. And also go stream Sour by Olivia Rodrigo because she is the new United States president. She was at the White House, so it's confirmed.
Took a selfie with
Joe. Bestie Joe.
And she met Kamala.
Yeah. I love Olivia Rodrigo. Anyways. Yeah, Taylor Swift fans keep taking pictures of her at the podium and, like, captioning them, like, Olivia Rodrigo announcing that the new United States national anthem is New Romantics by Taylor Swift, which it should be, but, yeah. So, that's the vibe, everybody. Have a great night or day or evening or morning or any rest of your day. If it's, like, past 2 a.m. where you are, go to bed. Even if it's, like, past midnight where you are. Go to bed, honey. Like, oh my god. I go to bed at 10:30.
Me too.
I have to wake up for an 8:15 arrival. My campers don't get dropped off then. If they did, I feel like I would throw them somewhere. That was a joke. But yeah, I get to meet my 4 and 5 year olds tomorrow. Very exciting.
Me too.
Can't wait for that. And then my cousins are coming up. Vibe. The New York cousins, everybody. They're crossing the border. Watch out. Everybody in Canada should go and stay in their homes because they're here. Oh, also, if anybody from Barrie is listening and you're affected by the tornado, I hope that you're okay.
Okay, you're okay. Bye, Olivia.
Bye, everybody. Have a great rest of your whatever. Love you. Bye.
Bye.